Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Application Server Message Store Overview. Today's presenter is Tai Shea. Tai has worked in Level 2 support for both WebSphere MQ since 1997, and the Service Integration Bus component of WebSphere Application Server since its release in WASP version 6. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Tai.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tai Shrake. I'm with the Service Integration Bus Level 2 team. We're here today to talk about message stores. And these are the databases basically used by the Service Integration Bus messaging engines. I get quite a few PMRs and questions on these, so I thought I'd put a presentation together to sort of bring together information from a variety of different sources into a condensed digest, if you will, where you can get a lot of your key questions answered in one place. And if the answer isn't in there directly, there's very likely a link to where you can find the answer. So if we can, Joseph, we move to the second slide. Okay, this is our agenda for today. First thing is, what is a message store? Second thing is, there are basically two types of message stores, and we'll cover those in a fair amount of detail. The third thing is the common message store configurations, and then how message stores work, message store configuration at the individual message store level, tuning message stores, backing up message stores, viewing data in message stores, common problems and solutions, message store tools, and important APARs. And if we can move to the next slide, please. What is a message store? Basically, a message store is a database. A message store enables a messaging engine to preserve operating information and retain those objects that messaging engines need for recovery in the event of a failure. A messaging engine preserves both volatile and durable data in its message store. Volatile data includes data about non-persistent messages, and durable data includes persistent messages, metadata about persistent messages, transactions, and any objects owned by the messaging engine, such as queues and topics. So the message stores are absolutely critical to the service integration bus. Configuring them right and tuning them right is very important, and there's two kinds of message stores.
I would now turn to slide number 4, and back to you, Tai.
Two types of message stores. There are basically two types of message stores. They're data stores and file stores. Both of those are subsumed under the title of message stores. First, we'll talk about data stores a little bit. They were originally introduced in WAS 6.0. Most use a standard database, uses most standard databases, DB2, Oracle, SQL, and so on, for persistent message storage. That's the main purpose of a data store, or a file store, actually. The advantages of a data store. Since you can use a standard database, all the usual DBA tools and SQL commands can be used to manage the tables and the database instance. You can also utilize your existing resources more effectively. Most customers already have a database at their site, so they can simply utilize that. One technical advantage is that some J2EE applications can share the same database. JDBC connectors benefit from one-phase commit optimization and improved performance over using a file store. Disadvantages, it creates more opportunities for problems because the SIB tables, or the service integration bus tables, are exposed to so many tools and SQL commands. And running certain tools or commands at inopportune times can create major problems. So the things that give it advantages is the same thing that can give it a disadvantage. You have the advantage that you can look at the tables in detail using all the standard database tools, but at the same time, you can use those same tools to create problems for yourself. Next slide, please. File stores is the other kind of message store. These were introduced in WAS 6.1, and they are now the default persistence layer. So if you create a bus and you have a cluster and you add it as a member to the bus and a messaging engine gets created for you, it will automatically ask you if you want to configure a file store. The message store stores messages in this message store stores messages in flat files rather than database tables. It's a file-based transactional system that's used to provide reliable, recoverable storage of message data in concert with one- and two-phase transactional applications in WAS. The advantages of a file store, it is simpler administration because it is a flat file. The one exception is in the case of HA, where administration could be a little bit more complex, involving where you start involving more advanced file systems. And you also have lower deployment costs because you don't need a database. You can use your existing file system. Disadvantages: configuring messaging engines to fail over to another application server requires file storage files to be available at the new application server. And we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get into the presentation. Next slide, please. And we're on slide 6. We're going to talk about common message store configurations. This sounds like it would be a deep and complex topic, and I presume it could be if you really wanted it to be, but in the end, it's fairly simple because there's basically only two kinds of configurations, either local or remote slash shared. In a local configuration, all the message store data is stored on the system local to the messaging engine or the bus that's using it. This is the least desirable configuration because it provides only limited support for high availability. And I can answer any questions about that at the end of the presentation. Remote shared is where the message store is located on a node or a machine that is physically separate from all messaging engines. This is the most desirable configuration because it provides the best support for high availability. And again, I can answer questions about that later on. Slide number 7, please, Joseph. Okay, how message stores work. I will state up front that message stores and the logic that stores data in message stores and retrieves it is actually very complex. So this is a high-level view with some things that will help you as a user diagnose message store problems and things you'll want to know about. But the code that is underneath that is actually quite complex and involved, so we're not going to talk much about that. We'll hit on a little bit. Okay, when a messaging engine is created, it's assigned a unique value, an MEUUID. And you will need to configure a message store for the messaging engine when the messaging engine is created. When the message store is created, the messaging engine MEUUID is written into the message store. This value associates a specific messaging engine with a specific message store. They effectively become a matched set. Each messaging engine owns its own unique message store, and no other active or started messaging engine can use that data store. This MEUUID value that I just mentioned is something that you'll see in the system out logs of WAS when a messaging engine is starting. One of the first things it does is when the messaging engine starts, it knows its own MEUUID value, which is sort of like a unique identifier that's unique, a string, an alphanumeric string that's unique to that messaging engine. And it, when it starts, it goes out and connects to the message store, and it compares the MEUUID value in the message store to the one it knows. If they're the same value, then it knows it's connecting to the correct message store, and the startup will continue fine. If it's a different value, then the messaging engine will not start because it's trying to connect to the wrong message store. Data stores. When a messaging engine starts, it gets a lock on its data store in order to prevent any other messaging engine or thread from writing data to the data stores. Once the messaging engine has a lock on its data store, it uses a combination of SQL statements and internal interfaces to store messages in the data store tables. That combination of SQL statements and internal interfaces is the more complex underlying code that we're not going to talk in detail about. But it's not a simple affair where you simply, if you get a message put on a queue, you simply create an SQL statement and store it as an object out to the data store. It's significantly more complex than that. But Joseph, we move to slide number 8, please. Okay, data store tables. These are things that, this is a topic that comes up fairly routinely in customer PMRs, so I thought I'd just put them in here for you. They are in the info center, but they're a little bit tough to find if you don't know where to look, so they are here. There are, by default, 6 data store tables. Actually, there's 7. And the first one is the SIB owner table. And that is the table where the MEUUID value is written to when the data store is first created. And that's where the messaging engine checks to make sure it's connecting to the correct data store. In other words, the MEUUID value in this table matches the MEUUID that the messaging engine knows about itself. The rest of these are, from a customer perspective, you won't really deal with them, with the exception of the last one here. The SIB class map table is just catalogs the different object types in the data store. SIB listings catalogs the SIB NNN tables, and we'll get to that in a second. The SIB XAX maintains the status of active two-phase commit transactions. SIB keys assigns unique identifiers to objects in the messaging engine. If you're familiar with keys and databases, you'll know about that. And SIB NNN, where NNN is a number. These can contain persistent objects such as messages and subscription information. Now, these SIB NNN tables contain both persistent and non-persistent objects, and they use separate tables for the different types of data using the following convention. The SIB 000 table contains information about the structure of the data in the other two tables. The SIB 001 table contains persistent objects, and the SIB 002 table contains non-persistent objects that have been saved to the data store to reduce the messaging engine memory requirement. So just briefly, the SIB 001 table is the one where persistent messages are stored, and that's the one that customers commonly have questions about. And that table has quite a few columns, and when you look at it, you realize that we don't simply persist or serialize messages as objects into the database. Well, we extract data from the message and store certain pieces of data in certain columns. So it's very granular, if you will. And the SIB 002 table contains non-persistent objects. Now, normally, a messaging engine does not store non-persistent messages. However, under certain conditions, if enough non-persistent messages accumulate on a queue and it's using a fair amount of memory, we have what's called a spill dispatcher that will start to store some of these non-persistent messages out to this table if it's necessary. And that's the reason for that is to reduce the amount of memory we're using and keep things a little more efficient. And next slide, please. Okay, we're on slide number 9, and a little bit more about how message stores work. Persistent messages received on queues or topics are written into the SIB 001 table. I just mentioned that. Each message occupies a single row in the table. And when using assured persistent messages in particular, the message is written to the data store before it becomes available to any applications for consumption from a topic or queue. This way, we're able to recover the message in the event that something bad happens with the connection to the messaging engine or anything like that. We already have a record of the message and its transaction state before we even make it available on the queue. Information about the message, such as transaction info, the type of object the message is, etc., is written to the other tables as we just looked at. Simply deleting a row will delete the message, but it will not delete metadata about the message that exists in other tables. This will not necessarily cause any problems, but it does illustrate the point that deleting a row from the SIB 001 table does not completely clean up a message and its associated data. And deleting rows to delete messages is never recommended. Now, we've had customers do that, and in certain circumstances, usually in extreme cases where their backs are against the wall because of message load or some other reason, or lack of file space, for example. But that's not a supported action. We don't recommend doing that because the results of doing that can be very unpredictable. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, we're on slide 10. And now we're going to talk a little bit about file stores. In some sense, they're quite a bit simpler than message or data stores, rather, because there's no JDBC driver involved. File stores are flat files. They are created and configured during ME creation, ME being messaging engine, and in version 7 of WASD, the file store is the default message store option. And there are three files used by the file store. The first one is the log. The log is used to keep track of in-flight transactions. Data is written to this log serially, and the log file itself is circular, and the default size is 100 megabytes, which is usually sufficient for most customers. However, if you have a larger message load, this can be increased. Permanent store is used to store reliable, persistent, and assured persistent messages and queues. And here, the default size is 200 megabytes. The temporary store is used to store express non-persistent and reliable non-persistent messages. And the default size, again, is 200 megabytes. And in general, the permanent and temporary stores are generally twice the size of the log, the main log. That's the usual recommendation, and that is the default setting. Slide number 11, please. Okay, a little bit more about file stores and how they work. Data is first written to the log file sequentially. That is, new records are added to the end of the file. When the end of the file is reached, old records at the beginning of the log file are overwritten by new records, and this process repeats, which makes it circular. And subsequently, data is written to the permanent file store and temporary file store. The exception is extremely short-lived data, which is written only to the log file. But for longer transactions, for example, those will get written out to the permanent and temporary store files. The temporary store is only used when a large number of non-persistent messages accumulate in memory. It is if a sufficient number of non-persistent messages accumulate in memory, the messaging engine spill dispatcher will temporarily write some of these messages to the temporary store to free up memory resources. In other words, it serves the same purpose as the SID002 table we just discussed in data stores. Next slide, please. Okay, we're on slide number 12. And I wanted to mention checkpointing. Now, this isn't something that comes up very often, but it's very important to know because customers will sometimes see message store behavior that they can't easily explain. And a lot of times, and this is in regard to the resizing of message stores. And the key to understanding that kind of situation where somebody sees a large message store and then they reduce their message load and they expect to see the message store quickly reduce in size, it doesn't always do that. And the key to understanding why is to understand checkpointing. Checkpointing is an internal process that compares data in the queues and topics with data in the data store tables or file store files. It ensures that data is internally consistent and removes old data that is no longer needed. So when a checkpoint occurs, old data that's no longer needed, completed transactions and so on, when all that information is removed. A checkpoint occurs every 5,000 transactions, not every 5,000 messages, as some customers believe. And in the case of a file store, when the log is nearly full. So there's two different conditions when it can occur, every 5,000 transactions or when the log is nearly full. During a file store checkpoint, the following things happen. Recovery data is written to the log. This data is used to reconstitute the state of the log at startup, at restart or recovery. The log file is truncated to free up space used by completed transactions, and this is analogous to moving the tail along to the oldest in-flight transaction, in other words, the oldest open current transaction. Any long-lived message data in the active portion of the log is moved into the permanent store file, and that frees up more space in the log. So I hope that's a fairly clear explanation of what happens with a checkpoint. As I said, it doesn't come up that often, but if you see your file store not shrinking in size immediately, even though you perhaps have reduced your message load, take a look at this and it might explain why. And next slide, please. Okay, we're on slide number 13. Message store configuration. Let's talk about data stores first. Each data store has a number of configurable attributes. Perhaps the most important of these are the schema name and the create tables option. When the data store tables are created, they get a schema name. The name can be the default value, which is IBM WSSIB, or you can provide one of your own. Most customers provide their own. This name can be used to identify exactly which database instance belongs to a specific messaging engine. So that schema name is tied to a particular messaging engine. And you can find out more about that in the link you see right below that. And information about setting up the data store for messaging engine, the details about that are found in the next link, the second link down. And high availability considerations for data stores are found in the third link at the bottom. Now, there's a lot of information there that I could have put into the presentation, but the presentation would have gone on for probably 2+ hours. So to, again, keep this as more of a digest than an overview, I provided just the links. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, we're on slide 14, and let's talk a little bit about file store settings. basic file store settings are in that first link that you see right there. File store high availability considerations are in the following link. And regarding high availability, many customers use NFS for file store high availability. If you do use NFS, an important point to keep in mind is that due to locking mechanism changes between NFS 3 and NFS 4, NFS 4 should always be used. We've seen a number of customers who had locking problems with files that went away when they upgraded from NFS 3 to NFS 4. So that's always a good thing to do if you can do it. Okay, moving to slide 15, please. Okay, message store configuration, continuing here. In order for the messaging engine to connect to a data store, it requires two components which must be configured, the data source and the JDBC driver. This gets into the sort of murky area where what do you need to get the messaging engine to connect to its data store? The data source is similar to a JCA connection factory because it allows applications to connect to a relational database, in this case the messaging engine. Details about data sources can be found here at that link. The data source is also where you configure the component-managed authentication alias, which is the user ID and password required by the database. So when the messaging engine connects to the database, almost invariably the database needs or requires a user ID and password to connect to it. This is where you configure it, in the data source. If these values are incorrectly specified, you're going to get an exception that says insufficient privileges, and that's the exact wording. And that'll be thrown and printed in the system out log. And details about database privileges themselves can be found in the link at the bottom. And slide 16, please. Okay, details about data source configuration and settings can be found in that link. The data source configuration is not a terribly complex thing, but a lot of times when customers call in saying their messaging engine cannot connect to the database, it's because of the data source configuration being incorrect. Most of the time, it's the authentication alias that's incorrect. And again, you can spot that very easily in the logs by seeing the insufficient privileges exception. But sometimes it's an incorrect JDBC driver. Configuring a messaging engine to use a data source. In other words, pointing the messaging engine to the data source and saying, I want to use that specific data source to connect. That link just below there shows you how to do that. Now, the data source is associated with a JDBC driver where you can configure which JDBC driver and the helper class that you use. The JDBC driver provides an interface into the database, in other words, an SQL interface, and the helper class extends the functionality of the driver. And you have to have both there, and you have to have it both of them properly configured. It's critical that the latest driver version and correct helper class are selected. An incorrect configuration here may allow the messaging engine to initially connect to the data store, but will soon lead to erratic behavior and various exceptions. JDBC resource configuration is detailed in that final link at the bottom. I will tell you, we have seen customers who have selected the correct JDBC driver, but not the correct helper class. And in that situation, what often happens is that the messaging engine connects to the data store fine, but then subsequent to that, when messaging is done, particularly with persistent messages, things don't work out so well. You start getting bizarre SQL exceptions or other exceptions where the messaging engine is not communicating properly with the data store. In those situations, it's a good idea to make sure that both the driver and the helper class are configured correctly. In other words, they're kind of like a matched set. And if you use the correct pair, things should be fine. Okay, moving on to slide 17, please. Okay, this is just the tail end of what we've been talking about. Details about each JDBC driver can be found here. If you go to that webpage, it's pretty detailed. It's not something that comes up frequently. In fact, it almost never comes up. But if you really want to know what each driver does, this page will tell you in a fair amount of detail, probably more than you'll ever want to know. And moving on to slide 18, please. Okay, file store configuration. File stores, again, are generally simpler than data stores. The only things that can be configured are the physical location of the file store, which, by the way, cannot be changed without deleting and recreating the file store. That's a fairly common question. The other thing that can be changed is the size of the files themselves. File store file sizes can be configured to be larger, but not smaller, than the default sizes. Details about how to do that are in the link that you see there. Next slide, please. Okay, we're on slide number 19. Tuning message stores. In general, most tuning is done to prevent production stoppages due to a lack of file space. That's usually the situation we see. The tuning of a message store should always be done from the worst-case scenario perspective. An approximation of the maximum number of messages to be processed during the heaviest loads, the size of each message, and a contingency where messages accumulate on queues should all be taken into consideration. A general formula for the amount of space needed would be the maximum possible number of messages in the system, i.e. a worst-case scenario, multiplied by the size of the largest possible message in that system. Those two factors multiplied together will give you the total amount of file space needed, and if you can afford to, probably give it a little extra because you just never know what an actual contingency will be like. So that's the basic formula for determining the maximum amount of file space you'll need. And moving on to slide 20, please. Data stores, tuning data stores. The number of data stores, now I should point out before I read this, this is not a very common task, but it is possible, so I thought I'd bring it up. The number of data store tables can be increased if there is an apparent message to data store bottleneck in messaging performance. This is rarely done, can only be done when the tables are initially created. You cannot add more later. Instructions and details can be found in that link. And again, this is not a common practice. I can think of only one customer in the past that I've dealt with at least who's actually done this. Most of the time when there is a performance bottleneck with getting messages to the data store, it's not because of an insufficient number of tables. It's usually some other culprit, either the network or some topology problem. But if you did do this, the link at the bottom shows you an example of what your tables might look like, what your message store might, or your data store rather, might look like after you make this change. Okay, moving to slide 21, please. Okay, file store tuning. File store tuning can be accomplished in two ways. One way is to modify the default sizes due to heavy message loads and large message sizes and so on. But the question we often hear is, well, what size should the files be? Now, we talked a couple minutes ago about tuning for the total amount of file space that you might need for a file store. Here, we're talking about the sizes of the individual files that constitute the file store. In most cases, the default sizes are adequate. Using static analysis to determine the right file sizes is rather difficult. By default, the minimum size of the store is 200 megabytes, which is two times the size of the log file default size, which is something I already mentioned. Size of these files should, as a rule of thumb, remain two times the size of the log file, and it's recommended that if the log file size is increased, so are the minimum size values of the two store files, the permanent and temporary. Obviously, lots of messages will be sent and not consumed for a long period of time. This also needs to be taken into consideration when setting the sizes of the store files. The best means to determine the size requirements is to run load tests on the applications in as near a real environment as possible for a significant duration. Testing should focus on the boundary cases, in other words, worst-case scenario, long-running transactions, message size, and the duration for which a message is on a queue and not consumed. In other words, messages accumulating on queues, because if they're persistent, they need to be written to the file store. If log full errors occur, which we occasionally see, then the file sizes are too small. And the right file sizes are probably the sizes that eliminate log full errors, plus a percentage to cater for the extreme cases, for example, during failover. This log full thing, we don't see a lot of it, but it does come up occasionally. And a lot of times it's due to long-running transactions. Some products out there have the ability to create large units of work involving thousands or even tens of thousands of messages. And if you have the default file store configuration, that may not be sufficient to contain such a long-running transaction. And what happens is if the log file, if you start off with a with a perfectly empty file. The transaction starts at the beginning of the file. The long-running transaction continues. It goes to the end of the file if you're at the default of 100 megabytes. Then it goes back to the beginning of the file. But if the transaction hasn't completed, you cannot overwrite a current open transaction that was started at the beginning of the file, and you get a log full error. So if you see those, you probably have long-running transactions. You probably need to increase the size of the log file. Again, that has to be done when you create the file store. You can't change that in mid-flight. So that means deleting and recreating the file store. So testing for that kind of scenario is a good idea. Slide number 22, please. Best practices include keeping transaction size to a minimum, which is something I just touched upon. In other words, using more transactions instead of less, using small messages and not letting messages build up on queues or topics, and all of that's kind of a common sense approach. A second way to tune the file store is to modify some tuning parameters, and I'll run through these quickly. The SIB message store cached data buffer size, the SIB message store cached data item maximum size, and the SIB message transaction send limit properties. These properties tune the memory buffers used to store messages. It's rare for customers to modify these properties and really should only be done if a specific problem is encountered that warrants changing them. Details about these properties can be found here at this link. As I said, it's very, very uncommon that people change these parameters. You can only think of a couple of instances in recent memory at least. Most customers don't even know about them, but if you want to learn more about them, you can go to that link and that'll have all the details for you. And slide number 23, please. Okay, backing up message stores. The verbiage for both of these entries, for data stores and file stores, is essentially the same. The important stuff is in red. I'll read the data stores paragraph first. Backing up messaging engine schemas data stores should be done using the standard database tools that come with the database. However, do not attempt to back up a data store while a messaging engine is running and using the data store. Attempting to do so can result in lost or corrupt data. Always shut down the messaging engine using the data store before backing it up. And the same verbiage applies to file stores, in particular the last sentence. Always shut down the messaging engine using the file store before backing it up. We've had customers try to back up data stores in particular while the messaging engines are running, and you run into two problems. The first problem is that the messaging engine has an exclusive lock on the data store. And a lot of times these backups need to get locks on data store or on the tables, and they can't. So that's the first problem. The second problem is more philosophical, and that is that in a typical environment, the data in the data store is constantly changing. Messages are flowing in and out of the system all the time. So if you take a backup of a data store, you're taking a very small snapshot that could easily change within seconds and may be completely invalid within minutes. So there's some debate about the utility of actually backing up a data store or a file store because the data in there is constantly changing and very transitory in most cases. So that's something to keep in mind when you're looking to do backups. And slide number 24. Okay, viewing data in message stores. For data stores, your DBA can use the standard database tools to view tables and rows in a data store. However, as I note there, never alter any data in any data store table for any reason. We've had customers do this most of the time with bad results. I've seen one occasion where it worked, and I won't get into the details of that, but it's completely unsupported. You should never mess with them. You're free to look at them, but never alter them for any reason. If you alter the data, it can cause serious problems. It's an unsupported user action. If you alter any data and encounter erratic or unexpected behavior afterwards, the only solution is to drop the tables and recreate them. File store, the only supported solution, I should add. Same basic idea here, but with file storage, you're a bit more limited. There's no specific tool that allows you to examine the data inside of a file store log file the way you can with the database. While we're talking about looking at data in message stores, one item that should be mentioned here is the message store dump. Some of you may already be familiar with that. This is a dump of the metadata in either a data store or a file store, but it does not dump message data itself. It's normally used to examine the state of messages on queues or topics. So There is a tool that will dump the message store. But what it does is it dumps information about the messages in the data store. It does not dump the messages and their data, the payloads themselves. And the output is an XML file. It's a little bit difficult to read if you're not familiar with it. There's some information out there, I think, in the Info Center that talks a little bit about how to read them. But in general, this is a diagnostics tool. It's not intended to go out there and help you assess, I guess, you know, whether you need more files or whether you need more rows or anything like that. So in general, we don't recommend you run this tool unless you're just curious as to the output. Most of the time when it's run, it's so that we can assess the state of messages on queues because we're trying to address a different problem, nothing with the data store or file store, but some other problem. And we need to look at the state of the messages in the store. Slide number 25. Okay, common problems and solutions. The following scenario is the most common data store problem scenario we see in SIB support. And I say we probably see this problem at least once a week. And it's not so much a problem as it is a scenario. But let me read through this, and some of you may already be familiar with this situation. When a messaging engine starts, it makes a socket connection to its data store and then puts a lock, an exclusive lock, on the SIB owner table in the data store. That's the very first table of the data store. If the JVM, a messaging engine is running, is terminated for any reason, or there is a TCP interruption to the connection to the data store, the messaging engine will usually leave a lock behind on the data store. And termination of the JVM or connection interruption, such as a reset packet, leaves an orphan socket behind at the database end of the connection. And as long as the socket remains, the lock will also remain. The database itself owns both the socket and the lock. So when a messaging engine connects to a data store, it gets a lock. At first, it opens a socket connection to the database, and it gets a lock on the first table. So on the database end, you've got both a lock and a socket. If the JVM terminates, both the lock and the socket, in most cases, 99% of the time, will be left behind at the database end because the database has not been informed that there's been a connection that's been broken. And so you've got these two objects out there that are orphaned. They're orphaned from their original parent connection, and moving on to the next paragraph, if the JVM is then restarted, the messaging engine will attempt to reconnect to its data store. However, because of the orphaned lock or socket on the data store, the messaging engine will not be able to connect. Now, the messaging engine will attempt to connect for 15 minutes, about every 2 seconds, for a total period of 15 minutes. If, after 15 minutes, it has not been able to connect to the data source, if it has not been able to connect to the data store, the data source will be disabled, and no further attempts to connect will be made. Now, this is a fairly common problem because JVMs are often killed or they die themselves because they, you know, get into a bad state. And if there's a messaging engine running in that JVM and it's connected to a database specifically rather than a file store, you can run into this. Now, the solution to this problem is to ensure that the data store lock is cleared before the 15-minute retry period has expired. This can be done in two ways. One way is to simply restart the database. That's usually not a viable option. And let's continue to slide 26, please. The second way, and this is the most common way to get out of this problem, and it works quite well. The second way is to set the TCP Keep Alive idle timeout to a value less than 15 minutes. The default, and when I say TCP Keep Alive value, we're talking about a feature of the TCP stack. This is something that's outside of WAS entirely. The default Keep Alive timeout value is 2 hours, which is usually much too long for most environments. What Keep Alive does is Keep Alive will clean up the orphan socket after the period specified in the timeout parameter. So if it's specified at the default 2 hours, then you're going to have to wait 2 hours before that socket gets cleaned up, which is why we recommend reducing the Keep Alive value, the timeout value, to something much shorter. Once Keep Alive cleans up the orphan socket, then the database will release the lock. If the ME is still within its 15-minute retry period, it will be able to reconnect to its data store. So the key to success is to ensure The keep alive timeout is set to a value less than 15 minutes. Perhaps 2 to 5 minutes is a good setting, depending on how long you're willing to wait. And details, more details about this can be found at the link there. This is a very common problem, and this is a very common solution, and it works. Many customers are using it now. Because of the way messaging engines need to get an exclusive lock on their data store, this is unfortunately a situation that can arise. But similar situations arise with other products, I should note. And KeepAlive is usually a pretty efficient way to get past the problem. So if you set the KeepAlive timeout value to, say, 2 minutes, then once the messaging engine loses its lock on the data store and because of a connection, a broken connection, then KeepAlive will, 2 minutes later, it will clean up the socket, the database will then release the lock, and the messaging engine will be able to reconnect in a fairly timely manner. And in most cases, that's a seamless process to the end user. Okay, slide 27, please. Common problems and solutions. These are just a few other problems we see. I thought I'd mention them because they're fairly common. SQL exceptions thrown in the JDBC driver. This often occurs because of a mismatch between the JDBC driver being used and the helper class that's being used. I mentioned that earlier. Another common cause is the use of the Oracle version 9 driver, which is known to be problematic. The version 10 driver should be used instead. Now, I don't doubt that we have some customers that are probably still using the version 9 driver and not having a problem, but we have seen many situations where they use the driver successfully for a time, and then for whatever reason, they start getting a lot of SQL exceptions, and the only solution is to go to the version 10 driver. So if you're using version 9, I would strongly consider going to version 10. Another common cause of SQL exceptions in the system out logs is TCP interruptions that disconnect the messaging engine from its data store, which we just discussed in some detail. If this happens, the previous discussion on TCP Keep Alive would apply, which would allow you to recover from TCP interruptions more or less seamlessly. However, if these interruptions are frequent, deeper examination of the source of the interruption should be conducted. And slide 28, please. Okay, just a few more. A messaging engine was deleted and recreated, but its message store was not. And as a result, when the new instance of the messaging engine starts, you will see the following exception. CWSIS 1535E, the messaging engine's unique ID does not match that found in the data store, and then it gives the two ID values. The solution to this problem is to delete and recreate the message store. You may recall earlier I mentioned that when a messaging engine is created, it gets a unique MEUU ID value. And when the message store is created, that value is written into the message store. So now those two, the message store and that specific messaging engine, are a matched set. Now, if you delete the messaging engine and then recreate it without deleting the message store, here's what happens. The new messaging engine gets a new MEUU ID value that will now no longer match the MEUU ID value, the old one that was already written into the message store. And so as a result of this mismatch, you'll see this exception in the logs, and the messaging engine will not start. The only solution to this problem is to delete and recreate the message store as well, whether it's a file store or a data store. That's a fairly common situation that we see. Okay, file store logs get full. We talked about this quite a bit earlier. Conceptually, when the head catches the tail, in other words, for example, when you have a long-running transaction, and there's not enough space in the log for that whole transaction. More accurately, when an attempt to write to the log would mean that the head catches the tail, in other words, you're overwriting a current transaction, the log will be full. At this point, checkpointing has been unable to free enough space in the log for the new message or transaction, and this can happen in a number of scenarios. And let's continue to slide number 29. The following things or items are likely to lead to this situation. The use of large messages causing the permanent store and the log to fill up. Lots of work is being done in a single transaction, which I've already mentioned a couple of times. Transactions are long running, same basic thing. Messages are put but not consumed. In other words, messages are accumulating on queues and never being consumed by some application. Or very high throughput could get you into this situation, along with a combination of the items above it. When this happens, the log will simply time out the oldest transaction and continue. This does solve problems that relate to long-running transactions that are long-running due to some other application error, which we've seen. However, when the system is under too much load, the log full problems will continue with log full and transaction timeout messages in the system out log. The solution in this case is either to increase the size of the file store files or to modify the workload or message characteristics. So this is where good planning comes into play. Using the planning steps we talked about before as far as estimating the total amount of file space and the largest likely file size you'll need for the file store. And moving on to slide 30, please. Okay, important APARs. This is not a list, a comprehensive list of all the APARs that apply to message stores, but these are some of the big hitters that I thought I'd mention. Most of them are relatively recent, so if you're at a relatively up-to-date code level, you should be okay. First one, PK75931, where the service integration bus requires drop any table authority when using an Oracle database file store. A lot of Oracle users were complaining about the permissions, specifically truncate authority, that the messaging engine needed. This gets around the problem. So if that's a problem, it uses delete instead of truncate. So if you're using Oracle and that's been a complaint by your DBAs, this fix should take care of that. And slide 31, please. PK72567, messaging engine continues to run while the database providing its message store is unavailable with unpredictable results. This APAR is really a new feature. It includes a new custom property, which is the SIB message store JDBC failover on DB connection loss. And what this does is this. Prior to the introduction of this, if a messaging engine lost its connection to its data store, it would still try to do messaging, because the messaging engine itself is still running. So it would attempt to continue to do messaging, particularly with non-persistent messages, although persistent messages would get rolled back because they can't be written to the data store in most cases. That's especially the case with assured persistent messages. But we would, for non-persistent messages, we would still try to do messaging. And this would be successful most of the time, or partially at least. But customers were running into situations where they were getting internal consistencies between messages on the queues, messages in the data store that those applications needed that are now no longer available. And it would just create a real big mess if this situation went on long enough. The only analogy I can think of is imagine you're driving down the road in your car, and your steering wheel is the connection to the data store, and the messaging engine, or really your messaging system, is the car itself. Well, if everything's fine, you can hold the steering wheel and steer the car. But if you lose your connection to the database, basically what happens to your messaging system is that somebody pulls the steering wheel off the column. And so now you're going down the freeway at 60 miles an hour, but you've got no steering wheel. Well, your only two options are to either hope that the steering wheel gets put back in place and you don't crash, or you can apply the brake and stop. And that's what this custom property does. If the messaging engine loses its connection to the data store and this custom property is set to true, a message will be sent, an internal message, an internal signal to the high availability manager telling it to shut down this application server so that you don't run into a situation where you've got big inconsistencies between what's going on with the messaging engine and surrounding applications. And so it actually creates a JVM shutdown. And that seems extreme, but it gets you out of the problem where you have inconsistencies. And if you have really valuable data, you know, such as purchase orders and so forth, this is probably the approach to take to make sure that there's no inconsistencies and there's no lost data. So this is a really interesting APAR, and this is now the default behavior in WAS version 7. Okay, moving on to the next slide, please. Okay, we're on slide 32. This is PK74286, a messaging engine that is using DB29 for ZOS, fails to start and produces this big exception here. And basically, this all started with a change that was made to DB29. Customers upgraded from DB28 to DB29, and suddenly they started getting this type of exception about a data type that was found in a column. And what happened was that DB2 changed the data types for certain columns. If you're familiar with databases, you know that columns have data types. But we weren't made aware of that. So when we connected to the data store, we went looking for certain columns with certain data types. Well, they were changed, so you would get this exception. This APAR corrects that. And I would add, I believe there was another one that corrects a very similar error message for another column. And this applies only to DB29 on ZOS, but we've seen quite a few of these, so I thought I'd mention it. Okay, slide 33, please. PK68367, messages may remain in a locked state after database transaction logs become full. A messaging engine restart is required. This is a rather complex APAR, but I thought I'd mention it because locked messages is a common situation or problem with messaging systems. And when a system is under load, the transaction logs of the database used for the data store of a messaging engine can become full. And if that happens, which is not frequent, but if it does, messaging engine or messages may become stuck in a locked status on queues. And you see the following error that I've pasted there. So if you see this exception, or if you have locked messages, check to see if this exception is in your system out logs. If it is, it's probably this APAR. If you're at a fairly recent code level, you probably already have it. But I mention this because locked messages are very common, and they're very difficult to sort out the cause of locked messages. So one thing, if you have locked messages, one thing you want to eliminate as quickly as possible is known situations where they become locked. And this is one of them, a big one. If you have locked messages, right away, this would be the first thing I check. Okay, slide 34, please. Okay, PK35226, changed the database locking model to improve failover times. The database locking model has been changed so that the messaging engine no longer holds a permanent exclusive lock when it's active. Instead, it holds a shared lock. Now, this was done for the benefit of DB2 on ZOS, but the change applies to the other platforms as well. So, but it mainly affects DB2 for ZOS. I don't think it has any impact really on the distributed platforms. Somebody at one point earlier this year raised the question about whether or not this changes anything with run stats. And for those of you that run DB2, you know that run stats is a tool where you can get statistical data about tables. And the answer to that question is no. When run stats runs, it needs a lock on the tables. And we still, this change in the locking model does not allow run stats to run successfully, whereas before it didn't. You're still going to have the same problem. And while I'm on the topic of run stats, because we get a fair number of PMRs about it, I'm not sure how useful it is to use run stats on a messaging engine data store because, again, the data in there changes very frequently. But if you're going to run stats against the message store, just make sure the messaging engine is not running when you do it, and it should be fine. But this change in the locking mechanism does not allow run stats to suddenly start working, so I thought I'd mention that. And slide 35, please. Okay, PK35116, specifying a SIB file store directory path in UNC format causes the files to be created in the wrong place. Okay, this is not something that comes up very frequently, but if you don't have it, it can be a real pain to try to sort out because it's not very obvious. So it's worth looking at. Again, it's not very common, but if you try to create a file store and suddenly you can't connect to it, this is one of the things I'd look at right away. And slide 36, please. And that's it. These are all the topics we covered. I won't reread them again. We've been through them in a fair amount of detail. And slide 37, please. These are some additional WebSphere product resources available to you.
Thank you, Ty, for a great presentation. At this point, Mala, we would like to open the line for questions.
Question comes from Chuck Chang. Sir, your line is open.
Hey, Ty, I have a quick question.
Sure.
You mentioned TCP keep alive and want to set up to 15 minutes instead of 2 hours at default. Do we set up on the database side or on the WAS side?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a frequent question, yes. You do set it on the database side. So just to illustrate that, for example, if you had WAS on one machine, but let's say you had a database on a remote machine, you would want to set it on the database machine.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Michael Griffin.
Yes, I have a question specifically relating to the, what the benefit is to using the messaging engine. I'm familiar with MQ and how MQ works and the applications that I'm aware of that are using MQ with persistent messaging and whatnot mm-hmm. don't require all this. I'll use the term additional overhead. Is this replacing something, or I'm not fully understanding what the purpose of the messaging engine is.
Okay, that's a good question. Let me touch on that. And by the way, Michael, I gave a WSTI presentation last year that is an overview of messaging engines that you may find helpful. But I used to be in MQ support, so I know where you're coming from. Let me map MQ to the messaging engine or service integration bus concept for you very quickly. In a nutshell, with WebSphere MQ, you have a queue manager that can own queues, and you can connect it to other queue managers. And the purpose of a queue manager is to allow one application to send data to another application, right?
Right.
The service integration bus component inside of WAS does the same thing. Messaging engine is roughly analogous to a queue manager. You create a messaging engine, you can create queues for it. A bus is nothing more than a network of messaging engines that are all associated with each other, sort of like a cluster of queue managers, if you will. And the service integration bus component, where the messaging engines serve the same purpose as MQ would. Okay,
Sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm. So this is basically, I don't want to use the term a replacement for, but this would be used in lieu of MQ.
In lieu of MQ, actually in WAS version 5 and 5.1, those two versions of WebSphere Application Server came with something called embedded messaging.
Correct.
And what embedded messaging was, really, under the covers, was MQ.
Right.
A slightly stripped-down version, but at its core, it was still MQ.
Correct.
And then in version 6, we got rid of embedded messaging and replaced it with the service integration bus.
Okay, so this is just a replacement of the embedded messaging with a slightly better throughput.
Well, throughput is a variable depending on your environment, but one of the primary reasons for replacing the embedded messaging with the service integration bus is because the application server environment is a J2EE environment.
Right.
So it's all Java-oriented, and the service integration bus is much more in line from a specification standpoint with the J2EE specification than embedded messaging would ever be.
Okay.
And so part of it was getting a more holistic J2EE approach and getting in more compliance with that, and it's much more integrated with WAS than the embedded messaging component was, or MQ. So it's not just a replacement. There's philosophical and technical reasons for it. But in the end, like MQ queue managers, a messaging engine allows you to send messages to a queue or topic on a messaging engine, and another application can then consume those messages. So in that sense, it's the same thing.
Okay. One of the applications that I've seen that uses this a lot uses MQ on a separate server, but it doesn't use the MQ to communicate with another application. It actually uses it to communicate with itself. And so it sounds that, you know, you literally could get rid of MQ and use the bus situation and get accomplish the same goal.
Yes. I would say that in most cases you could get rid of MQ and replace it with the service integration bus. However, as you noted earlier, there probably is a little more configuration overhead. There's also a significant learning curve. J2EE and service integration bus, even though the service integration bus at least does a lot of the same things as MQ and basically does the same thing as MQ and serves the same role, the architecture and the topology and the terminology are all very, very different. They're all J2EE oriented.
Right.
So there's a significant learning curve. But to answer your question in a nutshell, is it possible to get rid of MQ and replace it with this? Yes, in theory, sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Dan.
Basically, I had the same question as the previous caller there, because we do have a full-blown MQ queue manager, and we run on the same box as our WebSphere app servers. And I was trying to think of a reason why I would actually want to use the messaging engine rather than just using MQ. I mean, all the functionality that I need, I mean, is built in MQ. You know, we have our, you know, set of queue managers, which are already set up to talk to the outside world. I was trying to think, huh, do I really even need to worry about setting up a messaging engine? To me, it doesn't sound like I need to.
Probably not.
I mean, we use MQ bindings anyway. Bindings. So, I mean, we're using cross-memory services. They simply run on the same box.
Right.
And I mean, you know, all the, you know, I won't have to worry about, you know, the sizing of a file store or data store or any of that type of, you know, headache, because I've got this all built in already to our MQ queue manager. I mean, that's already done.
Right, right. Well, if you're using MQ circular logs, then some of these sizing considerations can come into play.
Yeah.
But you're right. From an overall administrative standpoint, MQ is probably a bit more straightforward, although there's a lot of, you can get rather complex with MQ. I think most customers who transition from MQ to Service Integration Bus do that not because Service Integration Bus is going to provide a whole set of these spectacular new features that MQ doesn't have. It's not so much that, I think. It's more of a movement architecturally to the J2EE environment, where you have application servers that provide a lot of the services for you, such as security and transaction management and so on, that you don't get with MQ. And, you know, plus you can write everything in Java, which is what will run on the application server, and that code technically is portable. So now your applications become portable. So there's probably broader reasons than just simply focusing on the two messaging environments and comparing them. So if you're satisfied with your MQ environment and you don't really have a big J2EE requirement, then you probably don't need to change it.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Frida Argoni.
Hi, Shay. This
yes.
is Frida. I have a question related to slide 29, wherein you mentioned that you have to resize the file store in case of you run into out of space errors. And if you are doing that, essentially you are deleting the message store, right? Which means you lose the data.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you get into a situation, whether it's because you're running out of log space or whatever the problem may be, if you have to delete a message store for any reason, whether it's a file store or a data store, any message data that's in that store will be lost. So I'm glad you asked this question. If you do that, then before you delete it, you should make a backup copy of it. And there aren't any obvious tools where you could extract the data from it, but sometimes we can manage that depending on the situation. But you're right. If you have to delete a message store for any reason, you will lose the data that's in that message store, and that includes message data. And this is one of the reasons we sometimes recommend keeping message data in more than one place. In other words, yes, it's in the file store, or the data store, but it might also be a good idea to have your own application write the data out to a flat file somewhere as it creates each message or as it consumes each message. So that's something to consider. So you've got duplicate copies of the data so that in a worst-case scenario, if you have to get rid of one copy, at least you've got a second one. Good question.
Right, but you cannot really get out of the situation which you are in right now, which, you know, I'm trying to complete a transaction. I cannot complete the transaction because the log size is full. I'm trying to solve the problem of log size, then I have to delete the message store, which means I lose the data. How do I complete the current transaction? Lose the transaction?
Well, if you've got a large transaction that cannot complete because the log is full, if you gracefully shut down the messaging engine, that transaction will get rolled back. And so none of that, you won't lose any of that data. And then you can recreate the file store with a larger log file, and likewise permanent and temporary files, and restart the messaging engine and submit the transaction again, like a very large unit of work, for example, and then it should be okay. So in that case,
okay,
you wouldn't lose anything.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
There are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Mala. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.